Welcome into K-State Online. I am Mason Voth. That is Drew Galloway. We are here with you after a K-State basketball game. We did not anticipate being here today. I figured, well, you know, we're going to do a Sunday show on Sunday. We're going to have the bowl game. We can react to the St. John's game. So I was like, I don't know that we necessarily need to do it immediately following the game, but we had to after what we just witnessed because it was ugly and gruesome once again for K-State basketball. And I said it on Twitter, and you and I just talked about it. I picked St. John's to win this game 79-64, I think was my pick. I had St. John's winning by 15 points. And somehow, K-State found a way for a loss in that similar area. They lost by 17. They somehow found a way to make something I expected to happen feel and appear much worse than what I had even crafted in my head. They lose 88-71 to St. John's today in Queens. The Big 12 now trails by a game in the Big 12 Big East Challenge. The home team has won every matchup in this thing this year. So I guess, you know, if it had just been like a close loss or you didn't see all these errors, you would think, hey, tough road game. We thought that that would be a possibility. But once again, it's about how it looks for K-State. There, you can lose games and not have it be something that should set the world on fire and everybody should melt down about it. But it continues to be with this basketball team. When they lose, it is a significant thing that, you know, a lot of different things have gone wrong. And so we have to make a big deal about it because this is not looking like a good trend for K-State basketball right now. You see the three losses they already have. You start to question, are they going to win? I mean, Drew, you just said it before we started. Are they going to win again this month? There are three games remaining this month. They play Drake in T-Mobile Center at Kansas City, which I wonder what that crowd looks like. They're going to be on the road at Wichita State, which Wichita State much improved this year. They haven't won a game in this series for well over 20 years. This will be the biggest game in Wichita State basketball since probably going back to, you know,
since they played
one of the Greg Marshall games. Yeah, probably for them. Like, this is going to be a sliding doors moment for them in their program where K-State is gettable. You're getting them at Coke Arena. That place is going to be packed, and that has a chance to be the defining moment of the Paul Mills era kind of kicking off in a second season. And then Big 12 play is going to start the day before New Year's Eve when you face Cincinnati at home, which they took a bad loss this week at Villanova, but you feel better about where Cincinnati is as a program right now than K-State. So, well, let's dissect this. A lot of ugly things here for K-State, and probably the most disappointing part of this is that early on it felt encouraging because K-State had the lead at the half and there was a lot of good energy to start the game. Like, it felt like the best first half of the season from an everything perspective. Not, it wasn't the cleanest. K-State didn't shoot it the best outside of Brendan Hausen, but it felt like it was the best first half of the season, and then it quickly became undone in the second.
No, it's like you put on your, like, what we learned from the game. Like, effort goes a long way, and K-State played really hard in the first half, and I think that was probably, like, the one encouraging thing from this game was that they played really hard in the first half and played probably their best half, first or second all season, if you consider the opponent and just, like, the magnitude of the game. K-State played that game like it was their toughest game, and, like, they knew that in the first half, and they were responding to the physicality because there were multiple times in the first half and the second where we were talking in the KSO chat of, like, what is that from the officials? But they were really responding to the adversity. They were responding to the physicality that St. John's was playing with, and they were getting a lot of good looks in the first half. And I think that's something that is, I guess, a positive when you look at it, but all of that gets wiped away in the second half when you don't play hard, you don't really look like you care, you don't really make an effort to even, like, try and stop the bleeding. It goes a little bit unnoticed because of how the game ends up folding out and it gets out of hand. But it's a rough and weird dynamic when you look back that when the first St. John's run was happening, Jerome Tang was trying to call timeout. And Colin Hawkins ignored him the first time and got a layup. That's okay. But then St. John's goes down, scores again. And then, again, Jerome Tang's trying to call a timeout after another St. John's three, and the K-State players ignore it, and Max Jones misses a three. St. John's goes out and makes one. And then you're outscored 6-2 in that time, and then you finally get the timeout, and instead of being down 7 or 8 points, now you're down 12. And I think that that is kind of like a little like blip on what the whole game is, but that is kind of like the vibe that you're getting from K-State right now, is that they ignored what Coach Tang wanted to do, and then the game compounds and gets worse, and then by the time that you get the timeout, you're now down 12. And then another small thing that Fan and I were talking about was K-State has the ball on a fast break down 5 points with, I think, 10 minutes to go. And instead of just taking the layup, Doug McDaniel throws it to nobody. And then St. John's goes down and makes it a 7-point game instead of being a 3-point game. That's a huge swing in that game when K-State was finally starting to get a little bit of momentum after the timeouts were called, that you have that happen and then it compounds and then you look down again and then you're down 17.
Yeah, so if you go and look at this, I mean, the way that this unraveled for K-State, they open the second half and they get a bucket from Coleman Hawkins. They lead by 6 at that point, 41-35. From that point on, K-State was outscored 18-3 up until when they finally got that timeout granted, and they were then down 9 points at that point in the game. The game management has to get better from Jerome Tang. We talked about this after the LSU game. And there was a very specific kind of two different worlds that were on display in that game, where K-State, it felt like Jerome Tang let an LSU run get further along than it needed to. And it's like, okay, you waited a score or two too long, waited just a touch too long. Then you compare that to Matt McMahon. LSU had a decent sized lead. I can't remember the exact score at the point in time, but they had a decent lead. K-State got like two quick buckets and it was an auto timeout right there. That's the kind of thing where you, in Rick Pitino in the first half, he utilized it and it did a nice job of pausing a K-State run, let St. John's get back into it. And even though K-State had other moments in that second half where they stretched the lead out again, it at least prevented it from basically doing exactly what happened to K-State, where K-State let this thing get out, get big. All the momentum was there for them, or for St. John's, and you just couldn't reel it back in at that point. If you stop it early enough, maybe it hits pause, you can get a bucket or two, you can feel a little bit better about how things are going, and then all of a sudden, okay, the next time a run comes, because runs are going to happen in basketball, that's how this works. But when the next one comes, it's going to take your deficit from 3 points to 8 points, something that's manageable, as opposed to if you go and look at what ended up transpiring after that timeout was taken by K-State. So they were down 9 at that point when they finally got the timeout. The next time that they were able to, you know, feel like that they made any significant push, or I guess even if you just want to go to like the next TV timeout that occurred, they struggled again. Like the lead went from 9 all the way up to 14. Before K-State at least got kind of a bucket in there. So, like, that's what I'm talking about. You have to kind of restrict that. Now, to what you're saying, Jerome Tang was trying to call a timeout there. They even noted it on the broadcast. The problem with that, though, is, and even though Coleman Hawkins got that basket, it was very discombobulated. It didn't look like a good shot. It very easily could have bounced out. You still want to stop things there and get things paused, because K-State was clearly not ready to get back on the other end of the floor and be prepared to play defense. And the problems that they were having, they were still going on. None of it was corrected. Just because you get fraudulent, easy basket doesn't mean, oh, problems are solved here. That, to me, goes down to the coach and player relationship on this team is in a bad spot right now. Number one, we've seen that Doug McDaniel has already not played this year because of the coach-player relationship. The coaches were not able to get the players any looks in the second half. K-State didn't make a single three in the second half, and I can't remember a time where I felt like they got even a good look there. They have to be better in that moment. The players have to be more cognizant of what their coaches are doing or want them to do on the bench. That, to me, that shows a lack of respect and on the player side of it to not be able to pay attention that multiple times down the floor, your coach is trying to call a timeout. And you should be thinking in your head, you got it. This is where being a better knower of the game of basketball, all five guys on the floor should realize that in that moment, hey, we probably need a timeout. We probably need to scale this thing back a little bit because we're getting it handed to us right now and we have some problems. I mean, think of how many times just any person sitting there can go, oh, need a timeout. Probably need to use a timeout here. That if that's going off in your head as a player, you should be taking peeks at the bench and thinking, oh, hey, maybe coach is going to be wanting to call one. If he doesn't, then hey, it's on you to step up to the challenge, get out there and play. But it's inexcusable to have multiple possessions where, number one, for the refs, like, you got to be better there. I mean, come on. But the players, you can't let that happen. You cannot let that happen. So it's just everything that we saw in the second half for K-State is a pretty good illustration of why things feel so bad with this K-State basketball program right now. The game management is bad. I don't think the team knows how to play the game. And you start to ask the question, okay, my mom was a teacher for however many years. My grandpa was a superintendent and a teacher before that. Like, I got a lot of educators in my family. And while they're all respectful and they do what they're supposed to do, and Drew, your mom's a teacher, so you know this as well, I'm sure. They're fine in the room, but when they get home and they're with their family and they can kind of decompress and have their moment, they are going to share their true thoughts and opinions of their students in their class. And you know very well that some of the kids are just straight up idiots and there's not much hope for them. And there's only so much that a good teacher can do for them. But you and I know, and everybody watching this knows, because we were all students at one point in our life, that we generally can think, oh, we're pretty good at this whole school thing. Like, we got it down. There are some teachers that have zero clue what they're doing. And that's where right now K-State, you have to ask, is it the students that are bad learners or is it the teachers that are bad educators right now? And honestly, the way things are going for K-State, I kind of feel like it's both. And it makes this feel like a pretty hopeless season for the Wildcats moving forward because they're 6-3 right now. Tough games coming up. The way they're playing doesn't really give you any inspiration. I don't know how you think this team that was built through the portal is going to continue to play hard. Like, we've already questioned it for the start of this season. Now they basically have a reason to just go out and play for themselves and not lay it on the line for their team because it's not looking promising for them. So I don't know what the answer is moving forward, but it doesn't seem like things are going in a good direction for K-State.
Yeah, I'm not really sure how it gets better, and that is a major concern right now because the offense was pretty terrible in the second half, but I thought that the defense was worse, and just the effort on that end of the floor was pretty disgusting for the final 25 minutes of the game. If you go back, K-State was up 31-21 with 5:25 to go in the first half. St. John scored 67 points in the final 25 minutes of the game. That is almost more points in the 25 minutes than K-State scored in the whole 40 minutes, if you want to put that into perspective. So the defense has been abysmal all year. Was better in the first half, was horrible in the second. St. John scored 53 points, shot 52%. The rebounding was also horrible in the second half. St. John's ended with 7 offensive rebounds in the second half. K-State had 8 defensive rebounds. Like, those are things that it's like, do you actually want to be here and play or not? And I pointed it out a few times that there were multiple possessions where a shot would go up for St. John's and K-State guys are just looking around. Like,
yeah, a lot of ball watching.
And instead you get Zubi Ejiofor having a career game, not just with rebounds, but points as well, because nobody for K-State wanted to guard him and nobody wanted to stop him getting rebounds, which led to easy putbacks. So there's going to be a lot of soul searching. And I mean, we talked about it. You've talked about it now. I don't know where the next win for K-State comes from. And that's the bigger concern here, because I think that if K-State plays how they did in the first half, but still loses the game by like two or three, I think that everybody's feeling honestly pretty encouraged, because that was, that would have been a pretty good improvement. And in a game where K-State was a 10-point underdog, to lose by like three or four on the road, but play hard, play together like they did in the first half, I think everybody feels okay. But to lose the way that they did and just get hammered in the second half, it feels really bad. And I've pointed this out now. I did it on Bosco's Boys when Scott Wildcat had me do a prediction for this game. I've done it a few times now when we've just talked about basketball as a whole. In my mind, K-State's record is 0-3. They've only played three teams that are capable of beating them, and they've lost all three of them, and two of them have been pretty ugly. That is a problem right now. And that is why when you like look forward to the rest of the season, I'm not sure where a win comes from, because they haven't shown the capability of even really being competitive against teams that are capable of beating them. I mean, Liberty is probably going to win Conference USA. Whatever, that game was a 2-point game.
That's still not a good team. Like, we can try and dress it up, but yeah, Conference USA is not a basketball league. This is not Middle Tennessee State of 10 years ago. No, that's not a good loss for K-State.
But getting crushed by your two power opponents, and this is where the more concerning thing for me comes in, is effort level has been a concern in both games against power opponents. That is where I find a lot of problems.
Yeah, it's very concerning, because K-State doesn't look like they belong on the floor. And you think these have not been the toughest Power 5 opponents. Now, St. John's is a little bit better, but LSU to me is going to finish probably bottom 4 or 5 in the SEC this year. And so then you kind of start to think around like, okay, what's the next step here? How is this all going to play out? And because Oklahoma State is going to at least have Power 5 guys on their roster this year. Whoever else you want to throw into the bottom of the league right now. I don't know who exactly that would be at this point, but you could throw them down there. They all seem to be in a better spot than K-State, and you have to start to really question, as much as I was a champion of this portal haul because I liked a lot of the pieces and everything, it's clearly it's not fitting together, or the coaching staff doesn't know how to put the puzzle together. And either way, that's going to raise problems and concerns moving forward. And I think you're going to have to do a lot to try and, you know, figure this stuff out and fix it moving forward. And I don't think it's going to be this year. I think that this is a moving forward thing. You have to totally reconfigure how you think you build a roster right now, because it has not worked the last two seasons, and you need to start to build out some of this depth and probably do a little bit more evaluating of the personality and the mental side of the player that you're bringing in, as opposed to just the box score checking. And look, I will willingly admit that I was wrong about this team this year and what I thought they could be and what I thought they should do. But at the end of the day, I'm not the one that has the access to know what kind of, you know, player and person some of these guys are mentally. I can just look at how they perform on their previous team, and I can look at their numbers and everything. That's something that can only be done by this staff. And they have to get better about that. And at this point in time, like, I've been a champion for Jerome Tang, because I've felt like he gives K-State a chance to compete at a very high level. But based off what I've seen now, and even last year, I still thought at times Tang was doing a really good job with this team. Or the team that he had last year, to kind of maximize what they could kind of give as an output. But now you look at how this season has started, and I've got serious questions, and I'm starting to question myself for feeling like he was going to put this team in a position to succeed, and that I thought a lot of these players were going to help. Something's just totally wrong here. And again, I don't think it gets fixed this season, because we continue to be shown that it just isn't going to happen. And teams can do the whole 180 in a year, but K-State has a long ways to go before they can even get to the spot where they can start turning this thing around. They have to climb up a giant ladder before they can start walking back to where they need to go.
Yeah, and then we've talked about it a few different times too, of with how K-State's portal class was assembled, And the longer that this kind of goes on by getting clowned by St. John's, kind of got pantsed at home by LSU, losing to Liberty, there's going to be a lot of doubters and a lot of people making fun of K-State. And honestly, with how expensive this team is and how that they've played so far, it's warranted. Because K-State doesn't play hard. They don't look like they want to play together. They just look very discombobulated when they're on the court and kind of proving that you can't really buy a roster and make it work. You have to get the right pieces and coach well and everything to kind of get everything where it needs to be. And I honestly don't know where this goes because, I mean, we don't know what next year is going to look like, but something has to change. And this is where it gets even scarier is you're probably not going to have near the NIL backing that you did
no.
this season with how it's playing out so far.
I mean, that you're what crowd are you going to have when Cincinnati rolls in for the next home game in Manhattan at the end of the month? Because people are going to jump off this thing quick because this isn't like in the past where you have and this is a real thing. And like people in this era, winning matters more than anything to get fans in attendance because that mattered in the past. But there was at least still this little bit of a draw that came because, hey, these are our guys. Like we're going to support them like one down year, whatever. The people that are showing up to games, most of them never watched Coleman Hawkins play a single game before this year. Most of them never watched Doug McDaniel play a single game before this year. The only
Almost
guys on this roster,
Max Jones.
Yeah, the only guys on. I can assure you, nobody watched Moby Ikiguruke before this year. I don't think anybody was grinding D2 JUCO ball. But like, that's the thing where the only guys on this team that people have any connection to are David Gasson and Buddy Rich. And David Castillo to an extent because he was like the homegrown high school recruit guy that you bring in. Like you had that whole process there where they were in the recruitment. There were visits. There was the commitment. He signed. He showed up on campus. Like I think people feel really attached to that still. And that's probably where you're going to have to go because right now when you're thinking about going forward next year, because I think this is where you already start to have to let your mind linger at points. We thought this team was going to be better positioned to have roster retention. But now you start to ask, who on this team do you really want back next year that can come back? And David Castillo is number one on that list because he's already shown enough as a freshman to like what's there. You see everything as Iowa State throws a pick down 21 to Arizona State. So you see some of these things. And then I think you probably would want Brendan Hausen back. I think there's enough of a skill set there. Like he's limited in the things he can do. He's maybe being asked to do too much than what he already does. But I think you like some of that. But everything else, you're like, why would you want these guys back right now? And there's still time for that to be flipped around and changed. But it has to happen in a hurry because people are going to jump off this ship rather quickly. So everybody has to get this thing figured out. And I guess we'll just see. Cats have 10 days off before they play in T-Mobile Center against Drake. Any final thoughts here? Also, the graphic on the bottom is wrong. Hausen finished with 27, not 21. So that was, but that was all in the first half for him. So
I would love to be wrong, but it's hard to see this team not being at the bottom of the league right now, just with how it's looking and how it's playing out. I don't see a path where they can get maybe more than four conference wins.
Yeah, I mean, you look around and you see it's going to probably be West Virginia, Colorado, Utah, K-State, Oklahoma State at the bottom of this league. UCF probably.
And even Colorado has a pretty decent win. West Virginia has a pretty decent win. Like that's where you look and you're like, it could get a lot worse.
Yeah, West Virginia already has two top 25 wins this season. And then Arizona State, who you thought was supposed to be bad, they've got a win over St. Mary's and they only lost by 8 on the road at Gonzaga. And they only have one loss this year. Like everybody else seems to be outplaying, at least of the teams that were going to be towards the bottom, what they were projected. K-State is playing far worse. Now, there are some other teams at the top that are playing worse than anticipated. Arizona and Baylor are two of those, but they are not playing to the extent that K-State is right now and how bad they are.
I was going to say those teams will probably still be more engaged than K-State could be too, because that is my biggest complaint and problem with this team is that they just don't seem very engaged right now.
Yeah. A lot of questions, a lot of problems. We'll talk more basketball on the Sunday show tomorrow when KSU_fan joins us. We'll also know officially by the time we talk to you next K-State's bowl game destination. So we will do all that as Arizona State just scored another touchdown to go up by 28 on the Cyclones.
Forks up.
Yeah, forks up. I guess that's the only thing K-State fans have to live for today is Arizona State preventing Matt Campbell from winning a Big 12 championship. So enjoy the rest of the football today. Sorry basketball sucked for everybody. And I guess if you want positive thoughts, just keep dreaming about being in a different country in a couple of months and getting a kick-ass holiday gift for your friends and family out there. That's right, folks. The holiday season is here, and it's time to find the perfect gift for the Cats fan in your life. Give your friends and family the trip of a lifetime to see the Wildcats take on the 2024 Big 12 Championship Game loser Cyclones in the 2025 Aer Lingus College Football Classic in Dublin, Ireland. Visit cats2ireland.com for information on official travel and hospitality packages. That's cats, the number 2, ireland.com. And that will do it for Drew Galloway. I'm Mason Voth. Thank you for watching and listening to K-State Online.